We took a moment to look at who we are and where we come from. And so there's a lot of folks here that are new to the conference. And that's very, very exciting to those of us who have been doing this for a while. It's just really a hopeful thing because it helps us feel that this is a tradition that's going to continue, and community radio is going to continue to grow and develop as a medium, and that there's always a, you know, fresh ways of people coming in with new vision. And so this conference is really about looking forward at the future of community radio, and it's really the question we're asking that you put in your mind at the beginning of the conference and keep coming back to, and in the plenary tomorrow evening, we'll be looking at it more as a group plenary and then breaking up into small groups to discuss it. So we're kind of looking to keep this question on the table and create opportunities to keep revisiting it and hearing your thoughts. Also down in the dance hall downstairs is a place where you can put post-its on the wall, and we ask that if you do have a thought that you would like to share, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Would you please post it on the wall so we can start to see what everybody's thinking? So, but first we want to take a look at where we've come from just for a minute, and we are fortunate to have some of the folks here who've been with the conference since the beginning. So I'd like to ask Bear and Elizabeth Robinson to come up and just take a minute to talk about how this tradition started.
For the next 3 days is thank Ursula, but not just Ursula, but K-H-O-I. Because these things depend on stations like this stepping up and saying, we're going to do a GRC. From there, we have to go back to the beginning, and we want to acknowledge the two people who should be standing here are Marty Durlin, who was with KGMU at the time, and Kathy Manio, who was at WERU at the time. WERU. And we thought we'd start with a little piece of the mission statement, which they and a bunch of other people wrote.
More than audio outlets, volunteer-based community radio stations are cultural institutions in their communities, reflecting the unique concerns and passions of the people who live there.
So, in 1995-96, there was a sense of crisis in community radio, and it was a consequence in part of some things that were going on in national organizations. That were sort of impetus to get rid of the notion of volunteerism, replace it with the notion of professionalism, and I don't think the two should be seen as mutually exclusive. You can do professional sounding radio without being paid, for example, like most of you probably. And so there was a push in particular ways to adopt business models that many of us were concerned about. And part of this was pushed by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting at the time that had something called the Healthy Stations Project. And some of you may know about that, or you'll hear about it, and you should ask somebody that's been around for more about that. But the other problem as well was that, this was part of what the National Federation of Community Broadcasters was doing at the time. But as well, the NFCB was prohibitive in costs for most volunteers to come to. And I think that was the main thing that sort of ignited Marty and Kathy to call for people to come to Boulder, Colorado in 1996 for a conference. They didn't expect any people to come, and I think they had 70 or 80 people turn up. And Boulder's not a whole lot easier to get to than Ames.
Not at all.
that much easier. So, you know, people say, oh, what's, you know, the future of radio and all this other, you know, computer this. And I just have to say that in this room and at this conference this weekend, this is the future. You know, over 1,400 construction permits. LPFMs are the future, and I just want to welcome everyone here.
Yes.
Not
yes.
Even on the
and these are those values. If you haven't read the whole mission statement, KHOI has posted a lot of history on their site for GRC 14. Thank you, Ursula, for asking us to do this.
Thank you, Ursula. Thank you, KHOI.
Thank you.
Okay, this is, for those of you who do go to NSCD meetings, this is my junior year so moment.
But just it.
Okay, first of all, the LPFM intensive has been moved to North Adams, which is on the second floor. So if you have your programs, you may want to take your pen out because there are a few changes. The LPFM intensive is in North Adams. Second floor. Most of the workshops that were in North Adams will be in the community gallery downstairs where you registered. However, the news workshop is going to be in Hunsaker. The host for the solar power radio workshop and the women in radio have not been able to get here yet, so their workshops either will not happen or maybe they'll find a way to work it in somewhere else. But we don't know yet. They're going to arrive. So we'll let you know about that. Just a reminder, the gallery that we're in right now, and please take a look at the exhibit. It's really wonderful that this workshop or this conference is happening during the Susquecentennial days. So they've done this incredible exhibit about the history of this town, which is really the story of the Midwestern Railroad town. So take a look at it. Please also remember that this is an open gallery, so the public is coming in. Please be respectful that the general public is coming both upstairs and downstairs in the room downstairs. Don't forget to sign up for a field trip. On the second floor, there are sign-up sheets for the field trips. And if the weather is really bad, then we'll stay here and do something. There's a lot of stuff we can do here in the main gallery in the evening. And we'll get some food and just keep doing what we do here. Also on the third floor, back there is the kitchen. There are refreshments up there. So during the conference, if you have a little blood sugar low, feel free to go back in the kitchen and we'll probably set up a few tables in the back here so that you can hang out here. Also remember that downstairs on the second floor in the dance hall studio is basically a lounge, and you can also take the food down there, and we've got some easy chairs there. Please stop by and see our sponsors, Nautel, SEMS, and SEMS, and say hello to them at their tables. And what else? I think that's about... Honey? Yeah, there's also a charging station down there. And if you do have audio you would like to share or a program you'd like to share, bring it down to the media center. There are instructions how to upload them on the computers. But Mr. Hertz, Paul, who is raising his hand right here, he's also going to be kind of in the vicinity, and he can help you because that's his domain. He's in charge of that. So I think I got all the logistics. Okay, so let's start this conference.
Yeah.
This is tradition, so we're going to start with the presentation of the colors.
So those of you who did make a flag, your flags are at the back of the room. This is what we're going to do. We're going to have music to start the conference. This is Alicia B. She's a DJ and promoter from Denver. She's a regular contributor to KGNU, Eclipse Hip Hop Mix, and citizen journalism on Metro. She organized an all-women's hip-hop collective, the Women Illa Movement. Women Girl Illa Movement. This is the kickoff of our hip-hop summit, which is happening down the street around the corner. The hip-hop movement is meeting in a bar. And so, we're going to be meeting all afternoon, so if you want to stop by and see what they're doing, go on up the stairs. Also, at 8 o'clock tonight, they're giving a performance to us. They have something to say to community radio. So at 8 o'clock, head on up to DG's Tap House right around the corner and check out what they have to say to us. I'm really excited that they're here. It's the first ever hip hop song.
And they're local here. Isle of Beer.
Woo!
Best beer in town. Go to the back of the room, plant your flag on the stairs here. We're going to leave the supplies for the flags because a lot of guys didn't get it done. We'll leave it downstairs in the dance hall so you can make your flag later, and please just plant it on your own. And let's do it.
Thank you. Looks like I'm driving. In this box, and I can get you a ride. Music is back to when it goes to the eyes. And the G gets old. Bless you on the drive. Let's get to the project. Let it keep driving. Act a little work, but I'm living in traffic. Here's my number. Put it up in the traffic. Don't you get me to get me to get me back to the ground. What's the silence? What's on your mind, girl? Cause I'm taking you so one of a kind, girl. Go home to be it all to the night, girl.
I'd like to look out and see all these beautiful, smiling community radio out there, because this is who we are. I mean, this is my first GRC, and it has been an amazing experience to talk to so many people from across the country, to so many radio station personalities and DJs and GMs, and just get all that knowledge in. So I'm excited to just get to know everybody in here, because this is a fun time for me.
So very.
I enjoyed helping feed people some great local food last night.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're about as communities, is feeding our local communities some really great stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's wonderful to see you all. And I just want to say, if it wasn't for this lady, we wouldn't be here, really.
Equally, kindly, equally, sweaters,
increase to our community. My name is Jerome Edgen. I'm of the Swinomish Upper Skagit and several other peoples of this state of Washington. And when Ursula told me that we had Mr. Buffalo, the distinguished gentleman from the Meskwaki, here because it was important to the conference to acknowledge whose home that we currently are in, and that is the Meskwaki people. And my people, where I'm from, the Northwest Coast, it's our custom to acknowledge and pay tribute to the people that are hosts of the land that we're in. So if I could have Mr. Buffalo join me on stage for a moment. So in joining with that tradition of the Meskwaki and my own people, it's customary for us to gift to gift your host in honor and tribute to their land. This that you see here before you, this is a hand-me-down dream catcher that was made by my 87-year-old great-grandmother from the Swinomish Indian. And so in honor, I'd like that to give that to Mr. Buffalo. If you'll notice, it's actually in the colors of the Meskwaki insignia, the green and the red. And so, Pat, where? Thank you. Pat, where are you at? So, Mr. Buffalo, before you go, Pat would like to say a few words, and then we'll turn it over to you. So, go for it, Pat. And one last thing, make sure you join us at BG's Tap House for the first annual Hip Hop Summit here at the GRC. And I'd like to really extend that invitation to everybody, because what we're really trying to do is bridge the gap with hip-hop and youth and young people for community radio stations as a whole. So I hope you'll join us over there today for that event. So go ahead, take it away.
Thank you, Jerome. Yes, my name is Pat Schleibon. I'm from Ames also. It's been an exciting adventure contributing to the KHOI programming, specifically Local Talk. Mr. Buffalo was very instrumental in our creation of the Thanksgiving program initially. And that kind of, through that involvement, there was growth and development. Another part of my work is with the Department of Natural Resources. And we created a viewing platform for one of our bird conservation areas along the Iowa River, just downstream from the Meskwaki settlement. And Mr. Buffalo contributed to one of the interpretive panels. We felt that we needed to understand the geology of the Iowa River corridor. We needed to understand habitat protection that the bird conservation areas were providing. We needed to put a spotlight on some of the rejuvenating wildlife species that are occurring along the Iowa River, and we needed to include the Meskwaki. And from that coordination, we created a destination, if you will. There are people, every time you go to the marsh, it seems like somebody, you're there enjoying somebody else's visit. And in following up with Jerome's outreach and gifting, I'm here representing the staff, everyone in the Ames community, but specifically with the KHOI 89.1 FM station. So I need to set this down.
Thank you. From 1896 to 1930, Edward S. Curtis created as an invaluable photographs and written record of every major Indian tribe west of the Mississippi. This blanket of tribute to man is inspired by a design captured in one of Curtis's photos. The Navajo water blanket incorporates classic cultural elements that sawtooth lines of the eye dazzling pattern, and the dragonfly, the symbolism, the life-giving gift of water.
And we'll probably get a picture later, but maybe Susan, would you like to join us, please? Jonathan's wife. Because of a war with the French,
Oh, before that, you got to think of this as a map. If you can think of Tennessee, Kentucky, going north, Iowa, the Great Lakes, and the East Coast. That's a bioregion. When we used to live on the East Coast, and now we're living on the west part of our bioregion, it's not necessarily any different. The snows we get in Iowa, Pennsylvania does, New York. So we're basically home, and we've been in this environment for thousands of years. So we know how to live in this environment, and if you ever live through an Iowa winter, this area can be very nice to live in, but at times it's very harsh. Like the Iowa winter, you can actually die in the Iowa winter without modern technology. So that's the area we're from, and that's the area you're in now. It's very good land. But like I said, we migrated from the east, and then we settled in Iowa after the French kind of chased us into Iowa. And Iowa back then was a marshland. Nobody really wanted to live in it. Except for us, we said, this is the place, which according to some tradition is, in our language, when we were coming down the Mississippi and we went into a river called the Wapasinic, the head canoe guides, over here. So that's where Iowa gets its name, according to some people. And this is a place where we met Americans, and where we mostly had treaties with the United States government. And like I said, this is our bioregion. In 1845, we got removed to Kansas. And on the map, it's just a short little distance, it looks like. But it's just across the Missouri River. And it was totally different. Different environment, different weather. In Iowa, when we understand storms, know how to prepare for storms. But in Kansas, it was a totally different environment, and our children died by the dozen. So we decided to come back to Iowa. And there was no promise of anything if we came back. There was no promise of a well or welcome. There was no promise of a life. So we basically came home to basically die. Because everybody wants to die in bed. So the women picked up their children's phones, bundled them up, and left. And the men were sitting at the village going, what do we do now? So they got on their horses and they followed the women. And they were back with their children in our lands now, which weren't our lands yet. We buried them in Iowa. But it wouldn't have worked 10 years before or 10 years after. It wouldn't have worked in 1847. And it wouldn't have worked in 1867. Because that magic moment that we prayed for our salvation, happened at that moment in that time. Because in 1847, we just got removed. And everybody wanted us out. And in 1867, it would have been too late because the federal government got really powerful after the Civil War. And two things happened in that time. In the 1840s, the people that came into Iowa were American-born immigrants, settlers. When they came to Iowa, the first Iowa winter they had, some of them moved back home, and some of them went on to California. And in the 1850s, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin filled up with foreign-born immigrants, Germans, Danes, Norwegians, English, Scots, a whole bunch of different groups settled these areas, especially in Iowa. So when we came back, we had a pretty good welcome by people that weren't, their first reactions wasn't to shoot us. Their first reactions was to get to know us. So in time, we spoke a little German, a little Dutch, a few words, and those people got squatted. When I was a boy in Tema, there used to be a lot of older men that spoke in Squatty. So we'd be on Saturday night, we'd be running around and saluting the kids. And some white person, store owner, would say, "You kids, quit running around." And that command just went over our head. We just thought it was a mad white man. No. Was he one? Oh, he's just mad. No. Keep running. Until that, we met that one old citizen that spoke Squatty. And as we're running by, he said, "Got to teach you Ben okay," which means the same thing, no more time. And that command made us slow down real quick. So that's the population that we met and kind of grew up together. We've grown up with these communities. And over time, they knew us and we knew them. When we were coming up the road, they knew we weren't a bunch of Sioux or another tribe. They knew we were Squatties, and we went to a community. We knew the basic background of that town. They were Danes, Norwegians, Scots. And the best ones we got to know was the Amana people who are German. You know, we got along well with them, and we still do. And we still do get along with these little communities. Sue and I, we can travel the state without fear of physical harm by our white neighbors. If our car breaks down, we have no problem to walk up to a house and knock on the door. So that's our, how it's been in Iowa. Iowa has been, Iowa allows people to keep their original ethnic background and be proud of it, which allows us to be just one of the groups in Iowa that are proud of our being Indian. And we just incidentally, we just celebrated our 100th powwow. Which doesn't mean we've only been having powwows for 100 years. That's just the time when we called it a powwow. Because we adopted that word powwow to name our celebration. And this year just happened to be the 100th powwow. And one thing we learned in Iowa, we keep telling other Indians that we're different from them, because in Iowa, other Indians kind of call us arrogant. You know, Squatties are arrogant because of all the people, most people in the country, in Iowa, we were treated as humans. We were treated as human beings. The fact that we purchased land in Iowa during a time when no Indian could buy our own land in the United States in the 1850s. We had the same status as cattle. Black people had a certain status, Asians had a certain status, but us, we had the same, we were pigs, horses. That's how come you could have Indian hunts. Just like those people I was talking about that came to Iowa, that went on to California, they had Indian hunts. At the same time, Iowa was solid land of Indians. California was having Indian hunts. With the pitam, the women would have a netted pitam, and they would go have Indian hunts at the same time. So in Iowa, we're used to being treated like human beings. That's how come we know how to debate, because we're never been told what to do. Of course, we have our arguments with the state. Of course, we're our neighbors. Neighbors can't get along all the time. And we do have our little arguments with our white neighbors now and then. But overall, we've been treated real good. And we try to treat people good too. Just like our father. My wife and I have an exhibit tent where we have pictures and artifacts. And Sue and I believe there is no such thing as a stupid question. Every question deserves a decent answer. And sometimes we're on because our call-off starts on Thursday and ends on Sunday. By Sunday, we're hearing the same question for the 100th time. But we always answer with respect to our patrons, to our neighbors, to our friends. And we always answer the same way as we answered the first person that asked the question. But on Sundays, we're so glad that the last dance and the last song is done, so we can pack up and go home and be with our cat. Mr. Buttons. During powwow time, too, all our animals are what we call powwow orphans. For 4 days, they're powwow orphans. They're hungry, they're wondering where we went, just like our cat, Mr. Buttons. Every evening when we came home, he said, "Where have you guys been?" So that's how in Iowa, it's a very progressive state. It also has its tradition, you know, that it anchors to. Like letting Indians purchase land. Because in Iowa, we consider that we elected the president. I don't know if we have the rightful claim, but we do claim it in Iowa. Because the campaign started in Iowa. So, that's about it. If there's anything, but I can talk to you all the time, but I gotta stop somewhere.
In Minnesota in 1863, the Great War between the Dakota and the U.S. broke out. What was the impact in these communities?
Well, in Iowa, first of all, the Sioux came a year before, and they brought a pipe. And it was the diplomats from the Sioux Nation. We were at war with the Sioux at that time, but as diplomats, we talked to them in the village. They told us there was going to be a war, and they said, "Would you like to join us?" And the diplomacy said, "We accepted a pipe," and we said, "Well, people will answer the next day." So we talked about it. The next day came, and we told the Sioux, "No, we're not going to." they left, as soon as they left, we went to the local army base and army camp and said, hey, the Sioux are going to go involved. Do you want us to join? So for a while, we kind of stuck home. We didn't go out to camps, especially in northern Iowa, where we could be mistaken for Sioux, but nothing ever happened. And things settled down, but we did offer our services.
You said that Iowa was wetlands.
Uh-huh.
And I know that over in Indiana there were wetlands, which are all now cornfields. Can you talk about the wetlands and change, the transformation?
Well, most of Iowa was wetlands. If you travel to Iowa-Minnesota border, there's a highway that goes on one side is Minnesota, on the other side is Iowa. On the Minnesota side, you could see wetlands, but on the Iowa side, it's all corn. And it's all because of piling. They piled from the northern part on down to Iowa, and it killed off everything. Our cattails, bulrushes, arrowhead plants, and it made the water rush through so quick, and now flooding is so bad. They forgot that wetlands is like a sponge. It sponges the water, it cleans the water, and lets it go. But it devastated our culture, because as the wetlands disappeared, we had a hard time finding those plants. Incidentally, there's a couple of lakes in this county that we went to get cattail. And now we have to go to Oklahoma to get cattail. Anything else? Anything you wanted to know about the Swampies that we're afraid to ask? Dinosaurs and Indians. two cultures, two things that they think are dead. So when I walk into a museum, it's like the dinosaur walking into that museum. So quite surprised. But we still exist. You know, because they think we're dead culturally, or dead physically, or just Indians, citizens today. So.
About 2 minutes from my house, the Great Tribe Rancheria has opened a huge casino resort. I wonder if you, if your tribe has considered or done that, and what would you think about, how do you feel about that as a Indian?
Well, one time, me and Sue were talking in Sea Rapids, and after our talk, I said, are there any questions? And one person way in the back raised her hand, and he said, now that your people have a casino, are your people happy? And I looked at him and I said, you're damn right we're happy. Because I'm not going to stand here and apologize for my people. Have good water, good housing, and a better life. I said, did you know? I grew up without no running water, no electricity. In 1975, when I was a senior in high school, we got electricity in the house. In 1990, we got a pump on the yard. So when mom said, go get water, I was so happy because all I did was run to the yard and pull a lever up and there came out water. I didn't have to haul it 3 miles away in a car. That's how come Indian cars a long time ago. The shocks in the back came out first. So when you stop in a gas in a stop sign, when you stop, your car would go like this in the back. That's the reason why we were hauling that water. And I told him, and in 1993, we got big water inside the house. And we thought, when did they invent this stuff? It's, you know, it's like, so to answer your question, I can't talk for other tribes, but for us, it's been a blessing. It's brought we're involved economically in the tribe, in the state now, and it's brought us good. Plus, it's brought us problems, of course.
So, one quick follow-up: if we liberated Walmart, would you be interested in running that?
Sure.
Let's go.
One more logistical announcement.
new building, which is our library, which we fought hard to keep inside the city. And our parking lot is on the other side of that. It's a free parking lot. Folks are starting to park down here in Douglas, and you aren't getting tickets. The good news is it means tickets are $5. But, you know, that means you're an out-of-town vehicle, so you're probably going to get away with it. But the bottom line is our parking lot is down there. Help us out to stay on the city's good side. You'll see there's a whole free parking lot. The bike racks are down there, too. Enjoy your workshops, and we're going to keep the kind of a information table down in the where the registration was. So if you have any questions, any complications, come down and let us know, and we'll do what we can to help you out.